Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King. For this show, the Grizzlies lose to the Oklahoma City Thunder last night, 126-122. What a weird, weird game. We'll talk about that on the show today, as well as talk with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal as well. All that and more coming up on this episode of Locked On Grizzlies.
Pull up, jump shot.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the show. Like I mentioned, the Grizzlies lose 126-122 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They were up by 24 at one point in the game last night. It was a weird game, and so I wanted to do a small, short segment before we get into our conversation with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. They'll do that in a second. And the third segment of the show today. But, you know, first off, what the hell? Jaren Jackson Jr., I'm not sure if he's dead or if he fell off a cliff or what happened last night, but the Grizzlies were up by 24. Jaren Jackson Jr. was in foul trouble, and it ended up being a close game. Oklahoma City comes back, makes it a close game, and Jaren Jackson Jr. doesn't even sniff the floor. Solomon Hill plays 29 minutes last night. Solomon Hill played more minutes than Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, Kyle Anderson, and De'Anthony Melton. So that's weird. Jaren Jackson Jr. didn't have a good night. Only 5 fouls. He did have 9 points. He only had a couple rebounds. He was 1-for-4 from 3. I thought he was not having a great night. But at the end of the game, the biggest thing, the issue that I take with, and I'm sure everybody took issue with, is at the end of the game, when it's time to try and win the game, when it's a tied ball game, or you're down by 2, or whatever it was, 2 or 3 minutes left in the game, and you have Solomon Hill out there running instead of Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, I don't care if Jaren Jackson Jr. has 55 turnovers and no points, and he's 1-for-1 billion from the floor. At the end of the game, if you want to win the game, you put Jaren Jackson Jr. in the game. End of story. Jaren Jackson Jr. is 1 million times better than Solomon Hill. Jaren Jackson Jr. is your second best player on this team. If you want to have a chance to win the game, if you want to have an opportunity to get another win in the win column, you put your best players on the floor. I don't care how badly they played. I don't care what he's doing on the court. I don't care what the opponent's doing to him in the worst position. You put Jaren Jackson Jr. on the court to be able to try to win the game. End of story. I just don't get how you can justify, even if Taylor Jenkins says he wants to ride the hot hand, Solomon Hill ain't it, man. Solomon Hill ain't it. 2 minutes left in the go. 2 minutes left in the game. Solomon Hill has an ISO drive to the basket. Doesn't make the basket. Next possession, he has a 3 from the corner. Doesn't, of course, make it. So why in the hell is Solomon Hill on the court when it's crunch time and Jaren Jackson Jr. has 16 minutes sitting on the bench? I just don't get it. Solomon Hill played the entire fourth quarter. De'Anthony Melton didn't even play. I mean, just I don't get it. It was a bad coaching job. As much as Taylor has done previous to this, has been a very good coach. As much as I talked about him in the Tuesday show and how good of a coaching job he did against the Heat on Monday night, this is the opposite of that. This is the extreme opposite of that. And hopefully Solomon Hill doesn't see that many minutes again. There's just no reason for Solomon Hill to be playing 29 minutes a game. Reminder that Solomon Hill was traded for Chandler Parsons. Like, they gave up Solomon Hill to get Chandler Parsons. Think about that. The Hawks wanted Chandler Parsons with no knees instead of Solomon Hill. So let that sink in. As much as you want to cry how Solomon Hill's been good this season and he's a veteran, I don't care. Solomon Hill is not a good basketball player in comparative to Jaren Jackson Jr. Just not. And that was the weirdest thing about the entire matchup. Again, Melton didn't play late in the game. Also, very, very just strange. The Grizzlies could not keep the Thunder off the free throw line. They had 34 free throw attempts to 15. It's something we talked about in the previous show earlier that yesterday afternoon. If you listen to that show, you'll know that we talked about this very thing, is keeping them off the free throw line, defending without fouling. It's something they could not do. 34 free throw attempts to just 15. And that's big. That is huge, because you just so many extra opportunities. They made 27 of the free throw attempts. The Grizzlies made 12. You have to defend without fouling. Like, the Thunder are so good at getting to the free throw line. And it was a big, big point of contention in our previous show. We talked about it a lot. And it's just what they did. They got to the line. They made up for it. They were coming back when the clock was stopped, which is a huge, huge thing when you're down 24. You have to find ways to get extra possessions, and that's what they did. Even though the Grizzlies had 14 more possessions than the Thunder did, they still lost by 4 points. Take that. That just is insane to me, that 14 more possessions, 14 more opportunities to score the basketball, and they still lose by 4 points because they almost got shot. They almost had 15 more free throw attempts than the Grizzlies. Just really not good from the Grizzlies. Just weird. I mean, they didn't do themselves any favors. The Thunder did a great job of denying Ja Morant the ball late in the game. They didn't do themselves any favors in terms of turnovers late in the game. But I put this one on coaching. This is the one. I mean, I haven't had a game all year where I said this is because of coaching. But this one right here, that was because of coaching, because you had every opportunity to win that game, and I think you did everything you could to lose it. In terms of the rotations, in terms of the substitutions, and in terms of the players you put on the court at the end of the game. We'll take a break. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk with David Cobb and get his thoughts on this game as well from last night. Stay tuned.
The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockedonNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers.
Welcome back to the show, talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal, like we do almost every single Thursday. It's been a few weeks because I have been out of town. I've been at work. Last week I was in the mountains with my wife, so I don't feel too bad about not having David Cobb on. But David, what's going on, man?
I thought you were phasing me out there.
So. I wasn't. Every time I was like, you know, David's going to be on this week, then I was like, oh crap, I'm going to be out of town. Never mind. He's not going to be on.
It's all good, bro. It's all good.
It's good to have you back, though. We finally get to talk to you again. The Grizzlies had a game last night against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I have already talked about this game, you know, a little, probably longer than I should, but I've already talked about this game in the first segment. You know, I wanted to get your thoughts and let's start off with the biggest problem, I think, or I guess not problem, but the biggest issue that I took away the last night was Jaren Jackson. Did he fall off a cliff last night and in the game? I don't think you were at the game in Oklahoma City, but what are your thoughts on not playing Jaren Jackson? I mean, I know he's foul trouble, but at the end of the game, you have your best players in the game, right? I mean, that's just kind of what I think.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I'm sure you've talked about it, but he played the first minute and 48 seconds of the fourth quarter, and then he didn't play at all in the final 10 minutes and 12 seconds. And then Jonas Valanciunas, who they don't normally close with, but who was having a really good night, really didn't play much in the fourth quarter either. He played the first few minutes. And so, I mean, a lot of your offensive punch right there was not a factor in the fourth quarter. And, like, obviously Brandon Clark was having a great night, so I get him being on the court. Ja Morant is a fourth quarter guru, so clearly, you know, there was still some offense out there. But, I mean, Jaren had a rough few quarters, but did he warrant it? Did that warrant sitting him out the whole rest of the fourth quarter? I don't know. That was one where I really wish I had been there, or I wish a beat writer had been there, anybody, to ask him about it. Because just watching the post-game show on TV, they cut to Jenkins for a second, but it's just some guy from Oklahoma City who doesn't know the intricacies of the Grizzlies lineup, asking a generic question, you know, in a situation where my first question would have been, so why did Solomon Hill play the last 15 minutes of the game, and how come Jaren didn't play at all? Because to me, that was, of everything we've seen from Jenkins so far, definitely, without a doubt, the most head-scratching game in terms of personnel decisions.
It was a weird second half from Taylor. I mean, honestly, like I get right in the hot hand. Like you mentioned, Solomon Hill played most of that game, but Solomon Hill, like really? Like De'Anthony Melton didn't play either. You know, I thought that he's been closing great games lately.
You know, not only that, but like even still, if Solomon Hill was out there, it's to be a guy who doesn't make mistakes and a guy who plays decent defense, a guy who's going to make the right play. But he didn't always make the right play.
Right.
I can think of one instance off the top of my head. I forget if it was a tie game or if the Grizzlies were down by two. But the Oklahoma City Thunder were denying Ja Morant the ball on his way up the court most of the game and requiring somebody else to sort of facilitate the offense for the Grizzlies. Well, in this one scenario I'm thinking of, there's about 2 minutes left in the game. Solomon Hill has the ball at the top of the key, and Ja Morant never touches the ball on this possession. And, like, it ends with Solomon Hill, like, driving into the paint, and, like, that, like, just, it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, like, that's fine. He's been a really good, like, veteran for this team. But, like, you don't have to go solo ISO in the crunch time and Ja not even touch the ball. So, like, to me, like, that was what made it odd is that, like, it's not even like they deployed a lineup that, you know, made the right plays. I mean, they deployed a lineup that didn't really look functional together there at the end. And that was peculiar.
Yeah, it was strange. And like you mentioned, like Solomon Hill should be out there. If he's out there in the game, you shouldn't notice him out there. You know, like he should be out there just kind of doing his job, not really turning the ball over, just playing defense.
Up to that corner three. I mean,
yeah.
You know, but I don't know. It was weird. I wish somebody had been there to get a little bit of an explanation for it. But, man, you know what? The fact that we're talking about this Grizzlies team in these sort of terms at this point, like, I think a lot of people were disappointed that they lost last night merely due to the fact that, you know, you were starting to feel like this might be a playoff contender or something. You know, we were all sort of riding a wave on a good stretch for this Grizzlies team. And sort of having these visions of what could be, and a game like that sort of crashes those expectations and those dreams and aspirations a little bit, which, you know, if you really take a step back, it's pretty amazing that this team is where it is at this point in the season with the amount of youth that they have.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it wasn't even – I don't even care the fact that they – we're going to be a playoff, whatever. Like people, I know we had a lot of people talking about that playoff contender, whatever. I don't even care about that, honestly. For me, it just was a game that you had. Like it was a game that I thought was extremely winnable for you, and I felt like you just kind of threw it away a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
Who do you blame for this loss? This, I mean, is it a combination of people for you? I put a lot of it.
I gotta go with coaching on that one. Yeah, it's just the lineups were just so weird, and you know the adjustments weren't really effective. And I mean, you credit Oklahoma City too. I mean, this is an Oklahoma City team that's been
did a really good job of denying Ja Morant the ball late in the game. Really
they
good.
Did, and they've been just generally a spunkier team than I thought they would be. You know, I thought Chris Paul would have missed half the games they played, but with injury by now, I figured. You know, they would be in a bigger state of disrepair than they are, when in fact it looks like they might actually be a playoff team, which I think would be a really good coaching job by Billy Donovan. And they came back from a huge deficit. I forget who they beat the other night, but, you know, this is a Thunder team that and also it's a really good home court advantage. Obviously, I wasn't there last night. I don't know how full it was or how loud it was, but you know, they just got the momentum and the Grizzlies couldn't stop it. And it wasn't Taylor's finest game.
No.
You know, that's all right. Like if there's a time to make your mistakes, this is it. I mean, this team, as fun as the last, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks or so have been, you know, it's still a really young team. And, you know, we would be wise to remember that and not to get ahead of ourselves in terms of what they could accomplish.
Look, Taylor is a rookie too. And I tweeted that last night. He, in as much credit as I gave him on the show against, after we had the game against the Heat, where there was a timeout with 4 minutes left in the game. And in that timeout, whatever was said in that timeout got them back on track. And, you know, they remember they could drive the basketball against the zone. Like, whatever credit, you know, like, we could talk about how bad of a job, how bad of a, you know, lineup job there was last night against the Thunder. But equally so, you have to recognize the fact that he turned that game around with coaching against the Heat. So I would say I'd blame Taylor for that loss last night. But at the same, on the same token, he's done a lot of good this season too. I can visually see, okay, he is a good coach. Like, he knows what he's doing. Just look at the offense they've installed and getting this team way further along I thought they would be at this point. So, like, if we're going to sit here and say Taylor wasn't good last night, you also have to recognize the fact that he's been really good this season. And I don't think that we've talked about it enough of how good of a job he's done with this team, who, quite frankly, is rolling out Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder most nights.
You know, it's amazing if you think about the way they looked after their first, like in their first couple of preseason games against NBA teams to where they are now. I mean, they went out and just looked so young, so lost, so totally overmatched in a preseason game against the Hornets at home. I mean, they just got smacked in the mouth. I think that's the way that Dylan Brooks described it. And so this team has come a long, long way. A lot of that is due to coaching. And I think if you look around the NBA at teams with losing records right now, there aren't a whole lot of situations, there aren't a whole lot of coaches, there aren't a whole lot of rosters that you would take over the situation that the Grizzlies are in.
Yeah, it's a learning process. Like you mentioned, Taylor's a rookie. It's a young team. It is a learning process. And I thought last night was something that I think you could sit there and learn from, and I think Taylor Jenkins and the staff hopefully will look back and say, you know what, we can't play Solomon Hill 12 minutes again. That was a terrible idea. Like, I really hope that's what comes from it. And if it takes a loss like that to get there, I'm all for it, because again, Solomon Hill, like, really, like, come on. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll continue this conversation about the loss last night to the Oklahoma City Thunder with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal.
If you are looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to BreakingTee.com/LockedOn. Breaking Tee makes sports t-shirts around teams' most passionate moments. It's great for all fans. Just go to BreakingTee.com/LockedOn and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and more fun sports gifts.
Welcome back to the show, talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal, like we do and will continue to do all Thursdays throughout the season. One thing we didn't really get to in the last segment was D'Anthony Melton. And we had a chance to talk about D'Anthony Melton because we haven't been on the show because I've been out of town. So let's talk about D'Anthony Melton. Do you think that he has kind of cemented his kind of role in this main starting or main bench unit?
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that for sure. Because,
okay.
I mean, I get the infatuation with him. He's clearly a unique player. I don't know that there's another 6'3" guy in the NBA who can rebound as well as D'Anthony Melton. Also, for a 6'3" guy, he's extremely versatile as a defender, and that you feel comfortable putting him on a guy that's 6'8", maybe even 6'9", because of his wingspan. So he's a unique player. He's done well in the time that he's played, but I think that it would be premature to sort of peg him in as the permanent second option at the two guard, because I think Grayson Allen also brings a unique skill set that this Grizzlies team and coaching staff appreciate. They're very different players. I mean, they couldn't be more different players. Defense is D'Anthony Melton's kind of, especially in Colin Collard. He does some of the little things with rebounding and just being active. And then with Grayson Allen, it's the offensive versatility that's sort of his calling card.
Right.
And, you know, he's defended pretty well, or he was in that stretch between ankle injuries. He was defending pretty well. But I think that Grayson Allen's going to have an opportunity when he comes back to sort of wrestle back some of those minutes from Melton. And I think that ultimately I could see their playing time being largely situational and based off of matchups, because they're so different that they just, you almost can't just uniform say, okay, well, this is our backup two guard. You know, I think that their uniqueness, each of them, kind of is going to dictate, you know, who plays and when they play.
So did it bother you that Melton was not in the game at the end of the game? Because we've seen him close several games, close at the end, at the Miami game. Did it
bother you? I don't know. Like, again, that's like another one where I wish that we had a beat writer, myself or Amari or even Michael Wallace or anybody who normally travels for whatever reason. None of us were there. Holidays, budget, end of the year. There was no beat writer there, so nobody got to ask. On the surface, you wonder. Like, you absolutely wonder, because that was something that they used with success against the Heat. I mean, I guess the Heat situation was unique because you were trying to bust that zone. You think maybe Melton is going to be a little bit shiftier about attacking that zone off the dribble and sort of breaking it down in that way. And maybe this Oklahoma City team was different, and obviously, I don't know. I mean, I just wish somebody had been there to ask. And because, yeah, it does confuse me. It does raise questions. You know, I mean, that's ultimately something that they're obviously still working through, as, you know, these lineups have evolved and shifted, and health has changed and shifted, and guys have risen and fallen in terms of their level of play. It's just another example of how, aside from your top four or five guys, like, this roster is still pretty unsettled.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Brandon Clark out there closing the game last night, which for me, I thought was great. I thought, but it should have been Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. Right. Obviously, Jonas Valanciunas hasn't been really closing games out, you know, as of like the last week or so. Do you think he cares? I mean, no, he cares, but he's never going to say it publicly. But do you think he cares enough to where it's going to bother him? Well, yeah, we specifically asked him about it against the Miami game, and he's, you know, he always shrugs it off. He doesn't, you know, he is always a team player guy, but he also seems like a guy that would care enough to where it would bother him.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, the Grizzlies post those Le Bonner interviews where they have the kid asking the player like interview questions at the podium, and it's just a cute little thing that they do. And it was funny, the kid asked, he asked Jonas in one of these interviews, if you could change one thing about basketball, what would you change? And Jonas, in his lovable Lithuanian accent, says, "I would bring the big man back." And like, as funny as it was, you feel like it was as honest.
There's a hint of truth in there, right?
As you've ever heard from him.
Yeah.
I think Jonas wants to be out there. I do sense that. I also would say that if you look at his usage, his field goal attempts, his minutes now versus any of his 6.5 seasons in Toronto, he's getting more. He's a bigger part of the offense now than he ever was there. And obviously, he's not playing the role that he was after the trade deadline in Memphis last season. But they're still incorporating him to a pretty large degree. And maybe he does deserve. I think last night you can make the case that he does deserve to be out there, if for no other reason than he was just having a great night. And I get the fear. Maybe you have a different opinion on this, Mark, but is the fear, I think it's got to be that what happened to Aaron Baines in Phoenix when Ja dunked on him on the switch, is that that's going to happen to Valanciunas, and you don't want your bulky big man out there in pick and rolls late in the game, and so you go to these smaller, more agile lineups and avoid that. I mean, is that essentially, you think, the rationale for why he's not closing?
Well, it's got to be, because whatever Jonas brings to you offensively, sometimes it's when it's situational, because some teams have figured him out. Some teams, once they get into a game, and you saw last night, Dennis Schroeder and Chris Paul figured it out. Like, they figured it out once they turned a corner, and the Grizzlies were going to sag Jonas off so much because they didn't want him to get burned off the dribble. Well, guess what? Once they turn that corner, they have so much daylight. Like, they can do whatever they want. They can drive, they can shoot that jumper, and they just scored, like, it seems like a billion points off that same play over and over and over again. So, you know, whatever offense he was giving you is great, but at the same time, they're so bad defensively. Once that team figures out that little kind of weakness in their game that they can exploit it like crazy, you know, once they get there, it's almost, you know, his offense is great, but it's almost so bad on defense that it doesn't even matter. And it feels like that's just where they got to last night. Because I tweeted last night, like, you have to bring Brandon Clarke back in. Either, you know, they iced the pick one time with Jonas Valanciunas, and it resulted in a turnover. But they never did it after that. Brandon Clarke came in. But if you're going to play that game, you got to bring Brandon Clarke in, either switch everything defensively or play higher on the screens, any of those type of things. But it seems like once they figure it out, it's kind of over.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think I see that changing a lot. Right. I mean, I guess, you know, it all depends on matchups, foul trouble, whatever, like, you know, but I just don't know that I see him being a regular closer for this team. But why Jaren wasn't, I don't know. I mean, Jaren, in theory, the beauty of him is that he probably already is versatile enough defensively to where you're not going to get stuck in a bad place, you know, if they attack him. And that's, I guess, the next evolution for him this season is shoring up his defense, because his offense has turned the corner. His defense has still lagged based off of where it was last year. But I think that he is enough of a two-way player and versatile and agile enough to where he should be closing the game in almost every circumstance.
Yeah, I honestly don't have a problem with Jonas being not being in the game last night. I don't have a problem with D'Anthony Melton not being in the game. But Jaren Jackson Jr. is your second best player on the team. I don't care. And I tweeted this last night. I don't care if he has 55 turnovers. You put him on the game. At the end of the game with 2 minutes left, you put him in because he can make shots and he can make plays. And if that's Jaren Jackson Jr. making that ISO drive to the bucket instead of Solomon Hill, maybe that results in a point.
Yeah, right. Like, ultimately, like, you put him on the floor because he's better than Solomon Hill.
Yeah, exactly.
And because Solomon Hill's probably tired after playing for quite a long time.
Yeah, I totally agree. David, what can people read from you right now that you got out?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just expanded upon Brandon Clarke a little bit today. I've got a couple of things, you know, coming around the holidays. We're doing a big kind of look back the decade that was in Memphis sports, and the Grizzlies are a big part of that, a huge part of that in the city. Obviously, Penny and the Tigers have it rolling in a lot of ways now, but if you think about this decade, to me, a lot of it was defined by the solidification of the Grizzlies and the city's identity, and so that's going to be featured by the commercial appeal over the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. I love it. Make sure you guys go and read that from David. It's always good. I've already read your Brandon Clarke thing for today. It's awesome. So make sure you go and read that as well. I appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on, taking the time out. Make sure you go and subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast platform you're using, so you don't miss conversations like this every single day. We'll be back tomorrow with our Friday episode. David, I appreciate it, man. Let's do it again next week, the day after Christmas.
All right. Hey, let's do it.
All right, man. I'll talk to you then.